General Manager and Editor. I'm David Barsamyan. Thank you for listening.
KBOO Community Radio and Students United for Palestinian Equal Rights are proud to sponsor a panel discussion called Occupation, Environmental Destruction, and the Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions Movement, a panel discussion on international resistance this Tuesday, February 24th at the PSU Smith Center Ballroom. This panel will feature the Portland appearance of Palestinian intellectual and activist Omar Barghouti, as well as Kanahus Manuel, mother of four and First Nations anti-mining activist from British Columbia, Cecily Saraski, communications director of Jewish Voice for Peace, and Dr. Michael Yellowbird, professor of sociology and anthropology and director of Indigenous Peoples Studies at North Dakota State University. That's Occupation, Environmental Destruction, and the Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions Movement, a panel discussion on international resistance, February 24th at PSU's Smith Center Ballroom, 1825 Southwest Broadway in Portland. More information on the KBOO webpage on the right side under Community Events.
You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. The time is 10 o'clock. Coming up at 10:15 on Flashpoints, host Dennis Bernstein speaks with NSA whistleblower William Binney about the report that spy agencies from the U.S. and U.K. jointly hacked into the world's largest manufacturer of SIM cards in order to monitor mobile phones around the world. He also speaks with writer and journalist Kevin Alexander Gray about Malcolm X. At 11 on stage and studio, host Demae Roberts speaks with Damaris Webb, who's performing her autobiographical play, The Box Marked Black, about growing up mixed race. And Matt Colbert, a writer in Newburgh whose debut novel is called The Futility of Nicknames. And at 11 on Art Focus, Joseph Galavan interviews Sonnet Stanfill, curator of Italian Style at the Portland Art Museum. Up next on Air Cascadia, Chris Andre interviews John Kiriakou, the only CIA employee to go to prison in connection with the agency's torture program, not because he tortured anyone, but because he revealed information on torture to a reporter.
My guest today, John Kiriakou, is perhaps the first CIA officer to go to prison over torture. He was the first government official to say that waterboarding was official policy and had been used on Al-Qaeda prisoners, and perhaps others too, for that matter. As he did so, he encouraged public debate, saying, I think it's good that we're having a national debate about this. Congress should be talking about it, because I think as a country, we have to decide if this is something that we want to do as a matter of policy. Kiriakou was eventually charged with revealing the name of an undercover CIA officer to a journalist, though the journalist never publicly disclosed the name of that officer. He agreed to a plea deal rather than contest the charges under the Espionage Act, which could have landed him in prison for 35 years. He began serving a 30-month sentence in February of 2013. This was one of two convictions in the history of the Intelligence Identities Protection Act, where he and others, including the former CIA employee Bruce Riedel, believed is that the government was really punishing Kiriakou for talking about government-sanctioned torture. Welcome, John Kiriakou, to the KBOO airwaves.
Sure. Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me. It's really a pleasure to be here again. This has kind of been a saga for me. It started in December of 2007 when I went on ABC News and I told Brian Ross that much to the president's denial notwithstanding, the United States was torturing prisoners, that torture was an official U.S. government policy, and that that policy had been approved by the president himself. Immediately, within 24 hours of that interview, the FBI began investigating me. The investigation lasted for 4 years, and finally, in January of 2012, I was arrested and charged with 3 counts of espionage, 1 count of making a false statement, and 1 count of violating the Intelligence Identities Protection Act of 1982. 4 of those 5 charges were dropped. I had not committed espionage. Having lunch with a reporter from the New York Times and telling him that we're torturing people in violation of U.S. law is not espionage. And so those charges were all dropped. But I did take a plea, excuse me, to violating the Intelligence Identities Protection Act. What I had done was I confirmed to a reporter the name of a retired CIA colleague, and that is a crime. And so I was sentenced to 30 months in prison. I served 23 months and got home 3 weeks ago. I'm currently under house arrest until May.
Well, we're very, very happy to have you back in a world that the United States, though, in a sense, has become an open air prison camp of a sort. People, self censorship is rampant. And I working, you know, at the radio station, I've never seen anything like it. Listening to other media outlets, people who are theoretically reporters and even call themselves investigative reporters, the self-censorship has reached heights that I find unbelievable. You write, of course, advice to whistleblowers, do not remain silent. And yet, you know, fear, well, we seem to be in denial of the fear or that we live in, the repression that the USA Patriot Act brought to this country. But before that, I want to talk a little bit about words and how words are used to obfuscate. Instead introducing truth and producing topics that we can reasonably rely on to have some kind of veracity. Instead, words now are used in strange ways, and I think that whistleblowers like yourself come up against this frequently.
Oh, I think you're absolutely right. You're right on some very important points here. First of all, the USA Patriot Act has taken on a life of its own. I think that in the immediate aftermath of the September 11th attacks, Americans had no idea what they were getting into. Indeed, members of Congress probably had no idea what they were getting into with passage of the USA Patriot Act. There's nothing patriotic about the Patriot Act. It essentially gives federal law enforcement authorities carte blanche to spy on anyone they want, American or otherwise. Before the September 11th attacks and before the Patriot Act was enacted into law, for example, NSA was absolutely forbidden from collecting any information on not just American citizens, but on what were called U.S. persons, that is, foreign nationals in the United States legally with the benefit of a green card. Not only was that a violation of the NSA's charter to collect that kind of information, it was against the law until the Patriot Act was passed. And now NSA can spy on anybody they want. And it's not just metadata. They can listen to our phone calls. They can intercept our emails. They can even crack emails or files that have been encrypted. There are backdoors to almost every encryption program that's available commercially. So this is something that I think no American intended to happen. It's something that no American expected to happen, but now it's a part of our everyday life.
So, the world changed dramatically just in the years that you were in Loretta, and you did, in fact, continue to get your message out and engage in dialogue throughout the whole thing. What were people's attitudes towards you as a whistleblower that was imprisoned for calling out some very powerful people?
And well, I had trouble, actually, in the very beginning, and not with other prisoners. As crazy as it might sound, I got along very well with all the various factions in prison, the Italians, the Aryans, the Crips and the Bloods, the Hispanic gangs. I got along with everybody. It was the prison guards and the administration that gave me trouble. On my very first day, I went to the cafeteria for dinner, and as I walked past one of the prison guards, he whispered scum as I walked past him. And I thought, oh, okay, well, this guy thinks I'm scum. Well, I'm not here to impress this guy, so I don't care. And then the next day, when I was walking outside, I walked past a prison guard who called me a traitor. And I thought, well, I'm going to make mental notes of this. I'm going to write about it. I'd like to write a book eventually, and I'm going to recall this. And so I started paying closer attention. And the more time that passed, the more I realized that we have a broken, inherently racist prison system. It's run by people who are flunkies from other jobs. They couldn't cut it in the military. They couldn't get accepted to the local police department. So they took jobs in the federal prison system. And these are the people running the federal prison system now. These are the people who decide if they don't like your face, if you're going to solitary or not. These are the ones who decide if you're going to be allowed to write letters and receive letters or if you're not. When they realized after I had gotten there that I had ready access to the press and that I had begun writing these open, what I called letters from Loretto, they decided they didn't like that. And so they threatened me with solitary confinement unless I stopped writing these letters. Well, I went to the prison law library, and I found the regulations written by the Justice Department that allowed me to write these letters. And I said, look, your own regulations say that I have a First Amendment constitutional right to freedom of speech, and I'm going to exercise that right whether you like it or not. And you can't send me to solitary because it specifically says in your regulations that you can't punish me for exercising my right to freedom of speech. So what they then tried to do was to intercept my mailings. Whenever I would write a letter to a journalist, they would intercept it, and the journalist would never receive it. So I ended up having to write these letters and then send them to my attorney as legal documents, and then she's the one who ended up having them published. So it was a challenge from the very beginning. The Constitution means very little to people who not only have never read the Constitution, but in many cases can't read at all, and who have authority over you.
And misquote the Constitution. So-called authorities, well, you know, the Glenn Beck and that sort, say a phrase or sentence that lends authority to their dubious claims, and it's not a quote at all. It's made up, completely whole cloth made up. They make up.
Yes.
They make up parts of the Constitution that aren't there, that just simply are, they will blurt out to support whatever other blather that they're saying. Well, words are dangerous. People believe these words. Young people in their 20s, as we just mentioned, they hear stuff from all different angles coming at them all the time, and they vote, and that is very frightening.
This is a very dangerous development. You're absolutely right about this. People frequently say to me, well, why should I be worried about this kind of thing? I don't bother anybody. I don't do anything. I haven't done anything wrong or illegal, so why should I care? And I always respond the same way. That, do you know who first said that? That, well, if you haven't done anything, you shouldn't be worried about it? Joseph Goebbels said that in Nazi Germany in 1936, when the Nazis were targeting communists and homosexuals, and when they were planning to begin their large-scale purges of Jews, that, well, if you're not a Jew or you're not gay or you're not a communist, you shouldn't be worried. Well, my God, I feel like we're almost looking at the same kind of situation here in the United States, where, well, if the Patriot Act doesn't affect me and I'm not doing anything wrong, why should I care? Well, you should care because it affects all of us, and the Patriot Act is stripping us of our constitutional rights and our civil liberties.
It was never supposed to be permanent anyway. I want to just go back to what you were saying about your experiences in San Loreto and the way that you were, the contrast between the way the prisoners and the guards treated you. This is something I want to make very clear to listeners. A lot of people think, well, you know, John Kiriakou is very big, you know, seriously highly regarded at one time, member of the Insiders Club. He was one of the home team, so to speak. I think a lot of people would imagine that the people of your stature would go to some kind of, you know, club fed, some sort of country club type of a prison situation. But you didn't. You were in there in, you know, the real thing.
That was Chris Andre speaking with John Kiriakou. Tune in tomorrow to Air Cascadia at 10 a.m. for part two of this interview. Stay tuned following an announcement for Flashpoints.
Citizens of a so-called democratic society, we need to have information that ranges from A to Z, not what we have, which is A to B.
KABU is proud to present An Evening with David Barsamian, Wednesday, March 4th, 7 to 9:30 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater. All proceeds will benefit KABU Community Radio. One of America's most tireless and wide-ranging investigative journalists, David Barsamian is the host of Alternative Radio. Again, that's An Evening with David Barsamian.